We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. We're up to Pirkei Avot, the first chapter. We'll do the 15th Mishnah. Shammai Omer, Shammai says, Asei Toratcha Keva. Make your Torah a set thing in your life. And this is something which is a big asset in your lives if you'll be able to do this in your homes. If you have a set time that you learn, then the home will be a different home. The Gemara says a person who learns when he has a chance is like an adulterer. An adulterer, whenever he has a chance, he sneaks off to the woman he's committing adultery with. That's what a person's like if every time he has a chance, he grabs a sefer and he learns. A person is supposed to be married to the Torah. When you're married, you have set times, you're at home, you have set times with your wife. That's the way we are supposed to be with the Torah. That a person has set times that he learns, and a person has to be careful with that. If the home, if everyone at home knows you have a chavrusa at this and this time, and this is when you learn, so then you will see that the home will learn to respect it, and it gives the home the value of Torah. And that's one of the assets of having a shir you go to. If you have a steady shir you go to, so your kids know it, your wife knows it, and it instills the value of Torah in the home. It's not enough that a person says, you know, when I have a free minute, I grab something, and on Shabbos afternoon, I listen to the rabbi's drasha in between Mincha and Ma'ariv. That's nice, it's a good thing. But a person should try to make his Torah a set thing in his life. And a set thing could even be a small thing. There are people who take 20 minutes out of their afternoon that when their kids come home, if they work near the house, they meet their kids, they sit down and learn with them for 20 minutes, and then the kid goes home for lunch. Here in Israel, kids finish early in the afternoon. And he goes back to work. You know what a message you give your kid when you stop your work and you go to learn with him for 20 minutes? So for you, it's 20 minutes, but for him, it's a world of a difference. People who learn every morning, and the kids know that Abba learns every morning, so he gives a message. And when you have a set daf yomi, you go to every night at 7, so it is something. It makes an impact in the home. It's not the same as taking out a sefer. You should learn at home. You got to learn at home too. But you also have to have set learning. And the set learning also, the more religious you are about it, the more the home will value it. The Rosh Yeshiva of Mir, Rav Birnbaum Zatzal, he was known that he wouldn't go to any wedding that interfered with the night classes he gave at Mir in the United States. So his own grandchildren were getting married. And he said, Mazel Tov, and I'll come to the wedding after the night shir. And if you want me there for the chuppah, you'll have to make the chuppah late after the night shir. Because he wouldn't stop the learning at nights in the yeshiva. He said, I have to be there, and he was. I learned in Mir for a while. He was a beautiful man with shiny blue eyes. When I came to the yeshiva, so everywhere I sat, they told me this seat's taken, that seat's taken, this seat's taken. And he used to sit on the back bench. So at one point, I saw his whole bench was empty because no one would sit next to the Rosh Yeshiva. It's pressure, and also it's the Rosh Yeshiva's bench. So I went over to him and I asked, you know, I can't find a seat in the Beis Medrash. So he says to me, the whole bench is available. Come sit next to me. So we sat next to one another the whole period, almost the whole year I was there in Mir. This guy is taking advantage. Rav Bigun doesn't have a bench next to him, but it pays sometimes to sit next to someone big. So he also used to keep the air conditioning high. He was an old man. He'd sit in the middle of summer with gloves, winter gloves. You'd see him in the Beis Medrash because he said, the guys have to learn. They need it cold. They're young. I'm an old man, so I'll sit with gloves. And they had it cold. He'd sit in a coat and gloves the whole afternoon, say there. But the message he gave and what he was famous for was that he didn't stop the Seder. There was a set time of learning. His own grandchildren, he'd say, you guys make the chuppah whenever you want. I'm going to show up at 9 o'clock after I finish the night classes. Seito Chakeva, the Torah has to be set. And it doesn't have to be big times. Some people can only do it once a week, twice a week, three times a week. But if you have a set time that you value, then your family will value it. And in the home, you will find there's something God put in the nature of a woman that she likes to challenge the things that you hold dear. Damn it. And it's like she's testing the waters. And you have to show her that you cherish her, and at the same time, you're not going to forgo it. There's this gentle balance you have to maintain. So if you're going to try to have a set time for learning, she's going to sometimes say, you know, maybe we should go out on a date. And your response should be, that's a great idea. Let's do it right after, right before. Let's figure something out. If you're going to show that your Torah is something that can easily be foregone, so then that's the perspective the family will have on it. So then it will be foregone for many things. If you can, try to take a time that won't get in the way of family time. Try to take a time in the early morning. Try to take a time in the afternoon. Try to take a time that won't come in conflict of everything else you do, like the beginning of the night. But at the end of the day, whatever time you take, you have to remember that this is the message you're giving the family. Obviously, everything has to be done with genteel. Everything has to be done with love. But at the end of the day, you have to try and make the Torah set in your home. Obviously, everything's going to have its exceptions. When you're the Rosh Hashiva of Mir, then you could think of telling your grandchildren that you won't, you're not leaving the Seder. When you're not the Rosh Hashiva of Mir, then they might look at you like you're crazy, and they might be right. So everything here has its balance. We can't take the stories of the giants and decide that's where we are. If that's really where we are, then that's fitting for us. At our stage, we have to know how to apply this. I'm not suggesting that when it's your wife's birthday and there's this big bash in her honor, you're going to say, I got my learning, guys. It's okay. Happy birthday, honey. No, obviously, you guys have to know how to apply this in your own homes. But you also have to know that it has to be something that you don't forgo easily. It has to be keva. That's a set thing. And a lot of students say that they learn to value Torah after they do the army. Because in the army, they wake you up in the morning and they tell you, you have 120 seconds to have your shoes polished, yourself fully clothed, shaved, and standing out here. And suddenly you realize what you could do in 120 seconds. And suddenly you learn to value time completely differently. So in Torah also, we have to know there's a set time and we have to value that time, and then the message comes home. Yes?
Is it more important that you have, like, to say, Dafka from 8 to 8:15, if you learn this Sefer, or would it be okay if, like, after, sometime soon after breakfast in the mornings, I'm going to learn the Sefer for 15 minutes? Does it have to be, like, a set, like, from this hour to this hour, or is it just, like, a set amount of time? Like, if you're always going to learn that 15 minutes, is it okay if it's a little bit flexible? What would you suggest?
I think people are more successful when they have a set time. We tend to succeed. Your job doesn't... Most jobs don't say put in 8 hours today. Most jobs tell you come in 9 to 5. Today it's a new thing that they tell you put in a set amount of hours, and they're not so convinced that they're getting their money's worth. It's a unique position where they let you do that. And in Torah, usually a set time is much better. Then you also push yourself. If you tell yourself, I'll get the 15 minutes, when you need a nap, you'll take a nap. When you need to do dishes, you'll do dishes. If the Torah has set time, then other things will revolve around it. If the Torah is not set, then the Torah will keep revolving, and you'll miss it very often. It won't happen. It's more practical to have a set time, and you should try to stick to it, even if you're tired. So if you had a wedding last night and you're white, stick to the set time. You won't do as well in your learning. Take it easy. Do chazara. Do something lighter. But don't miss the time. And then, next time you'll do better. But it's important to stick to the times even when you're not at your prime. And then you'll find that many times your body is accustomed to focusing at that time. And even where you wouldn't have believed it, where you got 2 hours of sleep and you just married off your daughter, and suddenly you show up to your charusa and you tell them, there's no way I'm going to be able to get the sugya today. Let's do something easy. Suddenly you'll find yourself swimming and focused. And there's also a concept that if you try from below, they help you from above. So a person who sticks to set time has many areas where he's more successful with those who don't. And set times, guys. Set times. It's good to get accustomed to saying, let's say, I'll have 10 minutes after shachris every day where I do 2 halachot. I'll have 5 minutes after mincha where I'll do the parsha. I'll have 10 minutes after Ma'ariv where I'll do the Medrash, I'll prepare for Shabbos, and I'll have nice stories for my kids. If you have set times, then you end up doing much, much more. I have a chavrusa where we learn 5 minutes every night. And we've already finished many Sfarim. I mean, it's all online. You could hear it, audio recordings. Because it's set. 5 minutes every night. But 5 minutes every night, after a few years, you start covering Sfarim. The Chafetz Chaim, the Shmir Saloshin, the Chafetz Chaim twice, the Rambam Sefer Mitzvos. I'm telling you, big books for 5 minutes a night. Over years, you cover it. Consistency gets you very far. But you got to be consistent. And that's more powerful than going out to Beis Medrash and getting 2 hours once a month. 5 minutes every day is much more. Even if time-wise one comes out more than the other, that's not the point. And your lives are different. Emol me'at v'asei harbe. Say little and do much. And they're each their own tip. Wives don't like husbands who promise and don't fill. And kids don't either. Kids will remember the teacher who made promises and didn't live up to it. So, better say less. V'asei harbe, it's important to do a lot. On the other hand, Chazal said, it's always important to indicate, I want to do more. Not to promise you'll do more, but to indicate that you want to do more. The Talmud says, we learn from the peacock. When the peacock comes to mate, the peacock spreads its wings. Chazal say, it's telling the female, I'm going to give you all these beautiful colors, and I'm going to give you everything under the planet. And then after they mate, the peacock bows away from the mate. So Chazal said, the peacock's telling its mate, I'm so sorry, I can't today. So Chazal say that we have to learn from the peacock. We have to indicate to our spouse that we want to give as much as we can. And when we'll be able to, we'll give even more. Like Rabbi Akiva told his wife, Rachel. He said to her, when I'll be able to afford it, I'll give you a crown of gold with Jerusalem on it. When he could afford it, he did. So they were impoverished. All they had was hay, and he was plucking the hay out of her hair. And he said to her, I'm telling you, you deserve it. And when I could, I will. And that's an important thought. But when you obligate to do something, when you say, I'm going to do the dishes, go do those dishes. Better say less and do more than to say more and do less. And wives are often frustrated with men. We will see this concept time and again in today's Mishnayot. Men have the capacity to start many projects. We're very good at starting projects. We're very, very good. Go to the average man's basement or shed, and you'll see a lot of things he's in the middle of. It's like the capacity for a man to bring many, many children to the world. He's good at starting things. It takes a woman to nourish something for 9 months. We each have both strengths, the strength to start, to initiate, and the strength to nurture. But women are stronger at nurturing. And men are stronger at starting, at initiating. I have a friend who he had the good fortune or bad fortune of having a lot of extra money over the years. And he'd get into many businesses. He started many businesses. Every time he made another million, he lost it. And he kept making millions and losing them. Now, his own business was good. He was making millions. But every time he was starting a new startup, and every time it flopped. So he'd as soon as he'd make his millions, he'd lose them. And I know him now for maybe 20, 25 years. I don't know how many millions he's already lost. Every 2-3 years, it's another million down the tubes. Millions, guys. Millions. So the guy was very successful at what he did. Now he's at an age where suddenly his prime parnasa has gone sour. And he's got a problem. Men are very good at starting things. And momat v'aseh harbe. Say little, do much, what you do, follow through, and recognize that it is a male weakness. And when we tell our wives we're going to do the dishes, we mean it. And when we tell them, come, let's just go to sleep tomorrow morning, I'll clean up the house, and I'll take the kids out, and I'll do the bills, we mean it. We mean it. The next morning we forget we ever said it. We mean it. Chazal said, and momat v'aseh harbe, and you should know it's a male weakness. So don't be upset when your wives get annoyed by it. You'll say, but I meant it. I did. You did mean it. Okay, but what she heard is you said you'd do it, and you didn't. So emomat v'aseh harbe is a key point in the home as well. Yeah?
It sounds like you should just go do the dishes without saying anything and have her find out that you already did them rather than...
Fine. Okay. Okay. Ve'eveh mekabel et kol ha'adam b'seva panim yafot, and greet everyone with a warm countenance. And this applies to everyone. Your in-laws too, guys. Yeah, everyone. Ve'eveh mekabel et kol ha'adam b'seva panim yafot. And Chazal said this is the most basic thing. Chazal say, ve'elishech teshukatech, that one of the things that God did to Adam and Eve was that he made Eve have this longing for her husband. It's part of the nature of the woman. So when a husband leaves for work, the nature of the woman is that she's longing for him. And when he comes back, she missed him. And us men, we have a tendency to be impatient with it. We have to leave, and Chazal say that when you're ready to leave, she's going to say one more thing. And you're going to stand there with what? She's going to have to think for a second, because she doesn't know what she wanted. She just wanted to hold on to you for another minute. You got a bus to catch. You could be standing at the bus stop. Chazal said, "Ve'lishech chukatech." It's the way God created women. Now, when you come back home, she's been waiting for you to come home. You won't believe me, because the minute you walk home, here's what happens. You won't believe what a hard day I had. She missed me. You walk through the door, and everything difficult is being thrown on your shoulders. So good you're home. The dishes are waiting in the sink. The kids have 3 diapers to change. And then you'll think back and you'll say, but I thought you said she misses me when I'm gone. This is what she misses me for? No, this is not what she misses me for. But that's a separate class. Maybe we'll go into that in a second. The first thing she wants to see when you come home is the way you greet her. And she won't greet you the way you want to be greeted. Not for a while. Be prepared for that. So if there are women listening to this class, let them learn from this. They should greet husbands with a warm, friendly smile and a cup of water and welcome home and how are you? But most women won't, at least not for the first few years of marriage till they hear a class on it. Be prepared that once there are kids and there are other things in life, she's going to greet you with the troubles of the home. Part of it is that in her mind, you're her partner for resolving the problems of the home. You're walking home after a tiring day and you don't want to walk into a house filled with problems. You want to walk into your castle. You want to sit back and have something to drink and take it easy. And in the back of your mind, you remember that your parent or someone else who you saw who was 30 years into marriage, when they came home, their wives didn't greet them that way. Don't worry, when you'll be 30 years into marriage, you won't be greeted this way either. But you don't remember, you don't know what your parents' marriage was like when they were younger. You have to be Yevem Kabel et Kol Adam B'Sefer Panim Yafot. Greet everyone warmly. Hopefully, there'll come a time when you could talk about it openly and share with her that you would like that too. And at least part of the time she'll remember that. Most of the time she won't. But that doesn't mean you don't have to. You have to. You have to be Yevem Mikabel Kol Adam B'Sefer Panim Yafot. Chazal say, when you go out to work, you're going out to life. And when you leave her behind, she misses you. And when you finally come home, she's had a hard time with you being away. The first few months of marriage, you'll also have a hard time with you being away. But after a while, you'll leave the house, and you have a bustling life outside the house. For her, even if she's leaving the house, her mind and her heart are still back in the home. And until you come home, she misses you. Now that might not be given expression in the way you think it should. It might be that she's sharing with you the troubles of the day, and that she's sharing with you every ache and pain of the day. And what they say in Yiddish, krechts. You guys know what a krechts is? Complaint. Every complaint she's had during the day. But at the end of the day, she's still waiting for your mikabel kol adam b'sefer panim yafot to greet her warmly. And that is your responsibility. You guys seem somber. Sorry. Yeah. That's the way it works, yeah.
What do you do if you work from the home and like, you need to concentrate on sometimes? Like, so you're in the home and so you have access to you, but you can't. I mean, if you're going to do your job properly, you can't really interact with other people. Like, how do you do that? I mean, it would be kind of harsh to tell it, like, I'm sorry, I just can't talk with you.
Right.
How do you do that? Do you just have to make an agreement that this is the time I'm working, it's like I'm gone from the house, I can't help you with the kids, and it seems harsh.
So it's very challenging. I mean, when I got married, one of my teachers told me, he said, if you want shalom bayis, if you want peace in the home, I don't know your wife, he said, and I'm sure she's the biggest tzaddikus in the world, and I'm sure her teachers taught her numerous times that when her husband's learning Torah, that she shouldn't bother him with a million and one questions. But I don't know that there's a woman on the planet who could be in the same house as her husband and he tries to learn and she won't ask him a million and one questions. And I don't care what kind of tzaddikus she is. He said, if you have a separate room and you close the door, that's already 10 steps in the right direction. And he recommended to us at the time, we were newlyweds, he recommended that we take an apartment that has an extra room where it's possible to learn or do work and close the door and then be able to concentrate. So that's one step in the right direction, having a separate room, that's possible. If it's possible, it's good to leave the house. It's usually very difficult to have a good relationship when both couples are in the house together for an extended period of time. It's unnatural and it's usually unhealthy. It can be a big strain on a marriage. It's doable, but it's hard. It's unnatural. A wife needs some time by herself in the house. And a husband also needs some time away from his wife. In a normal marriage, it's not comfortable for them to be together all day. That might sound odd to you, but that's usually the way it works. And there are many situations where people spend a lot of time at home together, and it places a strain on the marriage. It's not the ideal way. Chazal did say, "Yitzeh adam nefa'olo." A person goes out to his work in the morning. That's a much more natural way of life.
What about if you share the same workplace? Or even the same office?
Look, everything has its tips, but at the end of the day, it's less than ideal. Everything can work, and in every scenario, there are couples who make it work, but it's a challenge. You know, where we try to avoid challenges. Is it doable? Yes, it's doable. Does that mean that I'll be able to do it, or you'll be able to do it, or any specific person will be able to do it? I don't know. It's like any challenge. Who will succeed in standing up to the challenge? It's hard. Try being focused on writing a program. And you have to keep in mind where you're headed and where you're coming from. Let's say you're a computer programmer. And you're in the middle of writing the language. You're in the middle of writing the program. And suddenly, could you tell me which cottage cheese I should buy at this store? You know, this one's on sale, but that one, you like that one better. I just want to get what you want. The mere fact that you pick up your head from your work, you know, now you got to retrace your steps. Where were you holding? We won't talk about a day trader who actually has to follow the market back and forth. We once had a guy who told me, she walked in and I begged her, I have to focus, the market's fluctuating. She walked in, spoke to me for 5 minutes, bam, $5,000 down the tubes. Okay, you know, it's not the ideal scenario. Is it doable? Yes, it's doable. It's hard. Again, you have to remember the rules, and then you have to try to come to agreements. Then you have to remember what happens when, whatever you make an agreement, and one side doesn't stand up to it. And a lot of it depends on the nature of the husband and the wife. You know, some people are more disciplined than others. But at the end of the day, the nature of the relationship is such that it's not natural or easy for her to maintain such a distance in the home. You're setting up a challenge which is going to require both of you to do something that's unnatural. Don't get me wrong, for the guy it's very natural to say, I can't talk to you now. I mean, it's unnatural for him to react patiently when he's in the middle of something and she's coming in for the fifth time. Unnatural, I didn't mean for him to tell her, I can't talk. To a guy, that's very natural. It's a problem. Because we don't need the connection of speech as much as they do. But you have to remember that speech for them equals physical intimacy for us. So if she wants to talk to you, and you say, I can't talk to you now, it's the equivalent of you wanting to be physically intimate with her. Just physical contact, and she says, I can't have you touch me right now. You know, just remember, that's the equation. You know, speech for them equals physical contact for us. It's the same equation. And then you can understand where she's coming from. When she wants to talk and you don't want to talk, just think of it in your terms, in male terms. Mishnah Tet Zayin. Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer. Rabban Gamliel used to say, Asei Lecha Rav. Make for yourself a teacher. And we've discussed this numerous times, that one of the keys for peace in the home is having a rabbi who you could field the questions to, that the questions aren't up to both of you to decide, and you shouldn't be the rabbi in your own home. Ask the rabbi, and this way it's not you who's being stringent upon her. V'istalek min ha'safek, and distance yourself from doubt. One of the difficult things when we do tshuva is the questions we have. So you have to get used to asking. Doubt, Chazal said, is one of the worst curses. Chazal said, a person who hasn't been home in a long time, and he comes home, and his wife tells him, Amanida, we're prohibited. He can live with that. He tells her she's permitted, he can live with that. She tells her, it's a question. That, Chazal says, is torture. Because he's going to spend the whole time thinking, well, maybe it's okay anyways. So why are we maintaining this distance when at the end of the day it could be okay? As I'll say, doubt is one of the difficulties in life. We can handle knowing that something's prohibited. But to live in a state of doubt, that, Chazal said, is very, very difficult. So we have to avoid that. We have to avoid situations of doubt. So that means go and ask the question. Sometimes it's easier for us to tell our wives, just assume it's prohibited. That's not a way to live life. There's enough in the Torah that's prohibited without it. So Chazal said, "Histalek min asafek." They used the harsh word. Run away from doubt. Run away from doubt. And it's not only in your married lives, it's in your individual lives as well. Very often in the tshuva process, it's easier to be stringent than to verify. And that is a mistake. Verify. Life is difficult enough without stringencies. If there's no basis for this, so why do it? It's just tiring. And in the home, so then it just adds fuel to the flame in a negative way. It's another point that's irksome. We have to remember that married life, I'll get to you in a minute, David, married life is trying. Every single day of married life is trying. Every day has its tests and its trials and tribulations. It's far more difficult than any roommate you've had. It's far more beautiful than any roommate you've had. But it's also far more difficult. It means getting up in the morning and seeing that your husband left the socks by the side of the bed. Going to the sink and seeing that your husband forgot to wash the dishes he promised you he'd wash. Going out and seeing that your husband has a shirt that he needs ironed and you have to run out to work and he told you last night he checked and he guess he didn't check. He didn't have an iron shirt. There are a lot of frustrations living with a husband. And there are also some frustrations living with a wife. So married life, I once said, I said this about the first years of marriage, but I think it's true to some extent to all years of marriage, just to a greater extent in the first years of marriage. Imagine you're sitting here and we're talking, and there's a little mosquito that starts buzzing next to your left ear. So you could concentrate on what we're talking about, and you do this a little bit, and he flies away, and he comes back, and flies away, and comes back, and you can handle it. You don't go crazy. We're continuing to talk, and another mosquito comes and starts buzzing by your other ear. So now, both ears. So you're doing like this a little bit, and it's a little bit more annoying, and you can still concentrate. Now, as you're doing all this, you feel a caterpillar crawling down your back. So now you're a little bit more antsy. And while you're doing all this, you're starting to have an itch in your left foot, and you can't take off your shoe in the middle of class. Now you're on the verge of being ticked off. And as all this is happening, the guy sitting next to you starts thumbing on the table with a pencil. Now he's doing that and you're okay. But then a five-year-old comes and starts scratching the board with the blackboard. You're going to blow up. Why are you going to blow up? Because any one of those things at any given day wouldn't have caused you to blow up. But all of them together with the buzzing at each ear, and you know any second now you're going to be stung by this mosquito and the itching on both feet and the caterpillar down your back and the guy thumbing on the table. And finally the kid comes in and starts scratching on the board. That's it. You blow up. Every person has a certain capacity of nerves. And at some point, your nerves are ready to snap. Married life is a few mosquitoes around your ears. The first 2-3 years, it's like 5 mosquitoes. And then it goes down to 3. But married life is always, there's always going to be a certain amount of tension there. Because at any given day, it's a relationship you're working on, you're building. And it's a to and fro, it's a back and forwards. Married life isn't all about roses. Married life has a lot of roses. Married life is beautiful. But married life is also about making it work and contending with the day-to-day challenges of a relationship with two different people. So if married life by its very nature is a certain element of stress, by its nature there's going to be some stress there, and there are going to be moments that are beautiful, moments that are more beautiful. But there is a certain amount of stress. So when you take areas of doubt and you just say, let me just be stringent there, you're really adding unnecessary stress, unnecessary work. There's no reason for it. If today you think it's easy, it's not a big deal, so you haven't verified, but go ahead and verify. When you're married, you can't do that. It's not fair to your spouse. And even if it's chumras that you say, I'll be stringent, I don't care. So I don't know if when I have fleishik soup, but I didn't eat the meat, if I have to wait 6 hours. So I'll always wait 6 hours. I won't verify that. But you didn't eat any meat, do you have to wait 6 hours? What difference does it make? I don't care. Well, it will make a difference. Your wife is going to come to you in the winter months. You'll have had, let's say, lunch where you only drank fleishik soup. And she'll say, I want to make shawarma milchiks. I'm having a heartburn. I want the milchik shawarma this. And you'll say, no, I can't do it. And she'll say, are you sure? Well, either you can or you can't. Go find out. You're going to say, every kid, I'll drink down the whole cup. Your wife is going to say, we have to go to Shalom Zachar tonight. You drink down that whole cup in Kiddush, you know what happens to you every Friday night. You're not going to last. We have to go to Shalom Zachar. We have to go visit my parents. We promised. Don't drink the whole cup of Kiddush. And you say, but what's the big deal? She'll say, yeah, it is a big deal. You don't have to drink the whole cup. I'm not sure. I haven't verified. I'm just going to drink the whole cup. I'm taking small examples. But they're small examples that in the course of life, they make a difference. These are small examples. You'll see other small examples come up in life. So if you didn't verify the first time it came up, write them down and go verify. You'll be surprised. There aren't that many questions. You won't fill up even one notebook. But the questions that do come up repeatedly. Every marriage has its issues that come up repeatedly. And if you can avoid them, then it's a pity not to. Histalek min asafek. Run away from doubt, Rabbi Gamliel said. And don't frequently estimate in the stringent direction. Sometimes a person has to take a tithe so he could be accurate in his tithe, or he'll just say, you know, I'll take off more. I had a friend who used to work and he had to time his work hours. Anytime he was in doubt, he went in the favor of the employer. So he ended up losing a lot of money. And he always said, I can't steal, you know, when in doubt I have to go in his favor. So I was once at the shuk, I bought him a timer for 20 shekel. I said, the first hour you make back, pay it back to me. You know, you get paid $20 an hour. So here's a timer. Every time, just click the button every time you start working, because it's not fair. He works and his wife is getting upset that every time my husband can sit here at home and working and he forgets to turn on the timer, he forgets to look at the watch when he starts. And then he worked for an hour and we don't get paid for that hour because he doesn't remember when he started. Rabbi Gamliel said, don't frequently, sometimes in life you have to go the stringent route, but don't do it frequently. Al tarbela seromadot. Where you could be accurate, be accurate. In Slabodka, in the yeshiva, they used to have a little box which had change. And the students could put in their big bills and take out change, and they had a set amount of coins there. So let's say there were 100 coins in the box. One day, it comes time for mincha, the mashgiach bangs on the Bima in the center of the Beis Medrash and says, I want every person to check what change they took and gave to the box. There are 101 shekel in the box, 101 coins. So the students asked him, they said, it's one coin in favor of the change machine, the change box. What do you get? He said, no, someone who puts in 101 could put in 99 next time. There are 100 coins, there should be 100 coins. Life is about accuracy, where you don't have to, there's no reason to estimate. And a person has to get accustomed to trying to be accurate. What you don't have to do, don't do. Even in the direction of stringencies. Al tarbel aser omadot. Don't estimate, even in the favor of giving more. Yeah, David.
So number one, was this Slovakia, you see the British?
I don't know the history, I'm embarrassed to say.
So, let's see. I don't know about anybody else here, but where I grew up, I figured out over the course of time how to say who was safe to be around, who was not safe to be around, who I could trust, who I couldn't trust, who I wanted to make friends with. And whenever I ask a Rav any kind of a question on this topic, it gets shot down. And this is one of the things that people look up to me for in America. So how do we go about, I don't know if anybody else has gotten to the point where they need to know this information, or if anybody else was even good at it in, you know, Flintstone arts, but like, how do we determine these things when every time we ask these questions, like, this is important. A wife wants to rely on a husband to know, like, be a good judge of character, like, and figure out, like, who to trust, who not to, essentially.
So
we just say, like, oh, they're all yin. They're, you know, it's a process. They're not like two.
No. No, we've discussed this numerous times in the past 2 weeks, so I don't want to take the time for it now, so let's relegate it to Thursday night. I'll be happy to discuss it again. We actually, within the last month, we discussed this point. It's online somewhere. I think it was in this class even, so that's why I don't want to take the time for it now, but if you want us to discuss it, let's do it on Thursday night, okay? It's fine. We could discuss it, but I want to give it more than 2 minutes, and that's not fair to do now. Okay, we'll do one more Mishnah, and then I guess we'll try to finish the chapter next week. Shimon ben Omer, Shimon his son, he said, "Kol yomai gadalti ben hachamim." All my days I grew up among the sages. Ve'lo matzati laguf tov. Mishtika. And I found nothing better for the body than silence. So the first point he's telling us is it's best to be silent. In what case is he talking about? If you're sitting down and someone comes and curses you out. So there's nothing better than silence. One of the first reactions that couples usually have, that husbands usually have, is that they're very surprised at the vehemence with which their wives get upset. A woman, when she gets upset, you know the saying, blank has no rap, is that of a woman scorned? So when a woman gets upset, the lines that you'll hear are things that you'd never hear from a guy. She doesn't mean it, by the way, even though she'll swear she does. But she means to say, I'm very, very upset. Chazal said, the best thing is silence. I sometimes say, if you can escape to the bathroom, go to the bathroom. No one can hold it against you for having to go to the bathroom. But the pause that that gives you, it gives you time to think, it gives her time to think. Don't expect to walk out of the bathroom and she's all smiles. That's not going to happen. If she's normal. I mean, I assume you're all going to marry normal women. That's not going to happen. But the mere pause that you just instituted in the argument, that's already beneficial. The best thing, Chazal said, the best thing is silence. And with silence, you gain that you can think. And she can think. There is a theory that says don't go to sleep without resolving an issue. I don't understand the theory because bigger and smarter people than me have said it, so I can't say anything against it. But I need to understand it better, and I don't. My experience is that many of the arguments stem from the fact that people are overtired, and by staying up till 3 a.m. trying to resolve it, you're just aggravating the problem. So you have to try and bring the situation to a calmer place. But I don't know how to apply this advice that smart people give, that don't go to sleep without resolving an issue. I value the people who say it. I don't understand practically in our day and age how people are supposed to apply it. I think you can
issue your own issue or issue your spouse.
Issue between the two of you. If there's an argument between the couple, so it's nice to try and bring it to a resolution before you go to sleep. It's nice to discuss it, but I don't know. If it stems from the fact that you're both overtired, which I think many arguments do in our day and age, then you're not always going to be able to get anywhere at this point of the game. But a lot of it is agreements you should come to as to what's going to be your agreement in arguments. Meaning, if you come to an agreement, we don't go to sleep without resolving it, that has the plus that it gives you an impetus for resolving it. The problem is that sometimes, okay, in a nutshell, I hear this really deserves its own class. In order to resolve the issue, usually, the issue begins with the wife's feeling that she isn't loved. So you have to first take the time to reiterate your devotion to her, and she has to feel loved. Once she feels loved, then you can start working on the real issue. Now you understand that at 1 o'clock in the morning when this issue comes up, and you have to show up at work the next morning, it's going to be a little difficult to have the patience to do all of that. That doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. The question is, are you capable of it? You know, some people work better out of tiredness, and some people don't work so well when they're tired. But at the end of the day, you can't usually address an issue head on. What usually happens when there's an argument is that women throw out darts and then clam up. Meaning they'll say a whole bunch of things and then they're quiet. And then you say, okay, now explain to me. I didn't understand what you just said. And they'll give you 10 reasons why it doesn't make, there's no difference and there's no point in explaining it to you. And then you have to try and understand them. And they're like, I told it to you 10 times and I hinted it 15 times. And I don't understand what I want from you. I mean, I only said it 15 times. And even if you're the calmest and most patient person, you're trying to say, okay, did you mean this? She's like, huh? Did you mean that? Okay, go to sleep. And you're like, but wait, I'm just trying to figure out what you want. So remember, step one is you have to, so to speak, rebuild the relationship. You have to reaffirm the relationship. And then you have to show that you really care and you want to resolve it. And then you can approach the real issue. And all that takes time and patience. Depending on at which hour of the night you're holding, it's a little bit tough. But the first thing you could do is not aggravate the situation and be silent. Listen. Listen, hear what she has to say. So you feel it's unfair. Okay, listen some more. Hear her out, listen. And a good tool in trying to resolve any conflict is when both sides explain to the other side what the other side feels. Meaning, most of the time we don't understand the other side. Chazal tells us about the arguments Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Chazal say Beis Hillel would win the arguments because they would always first begin by re-expressing Beis Shammai's opinion, trying to understand Beis Shammai. Throughout the Mishnah, Beis Shammai's opinion appears first. Beis Hillel put them first. Meaning Beis Hillel were very focused on hearing out Beis Shammai. And very often in an argument, we are very focused on getting the other side to hear what we have to say. Whereas if we take the time to tell the other side, I hear, let me hear what you have to say. Imagine you walk through the door and your wife says, you're the most irresponsible person I ever met. You're standing there, well, it's good to see you too. You're not even embarrassed about it. I can't believe you did this to me. You're like, okay, forgot her anniversary? No, that's next week. I forgot her birthday? No, that was last month. What did I do? You're standing there thinking, and you don't even know what she wants from your life. You have two ways to respond. You could say, you know, it's not exactly the nicest way to greet a person when they walk through the door. Or you could forgo that, which is good midos, and say, I'm listening. Now, what's she going to say? So if she's very upset, you'll say, no, there's no point in talking to you. So then you're like begging her to explain to you what she wants, right? Some of you I could tell have been in relationships before, you know I'm not exaggerating. But Chazal say, "Lo matzati laguf tov mishtika." There's nothing better than silence. Listen. And then offer her, look, I want to understand what you're saying. Is what you're saying A or B or C? And at that point, without your saying anything, she's going to start feeling guilty for addressing you that way. You'll get far further in life if you listen and don't hit back. I mean, hit back figuratively. Just listen. and you try to make it work. You might say, well, why should I be spoken to that way? Okay, ask God why He created men this way and women that way, and women have their way of talking. With time, the speech will change. It's a factor of time in marriage. And it's a factor also of you being intelligent in how you speak to your own spouse. Whatever you say will be magnified 10 times backwards. Any comment you make, be prepared, will come back in a boomerang, but 10 times as big. And it doesn't matter what you say. And it doesn't matter if it's true about you. Maybe it's only true about her, that doesn't matter. Lo matzati laguf tov ela shtika. Nothing good other than silence. Velo midrashu haikar ela maaseh. And you have to know that the theory is not the main point, but the action. And this is again the point we were discussing earlier. Us men are very good in theory. The theory has to live up to action. And whoever talks too much causes sin. And Chazal say that "Kol hamarbe dvarim mevichet" is a reference to Adam and Eve. Eve said, God said, "Don't eat, don't touch." So the snake said, "Here, come." He pushed her to the fruit and said, you see? But nothing happened. And Chazal say this is a reference to people who try to add to the stringencies of the Torah. Shlomo HaMelech said, Al tos pal devarav. Don't add to God's words. He knows what He wanted of you. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, and we'll end with this point, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said a frightening thought. He said, in religious circles, the majority of Shalom Bayis issues, the majority, he said, almost all issues of peace in the home, in religious circles, stem from people being too stringent on the laws of family purity. People being too stringent in prohibiting acts of intimacy that are permitted in the Torah. Prohibiting themselves from times of intimacy, or prohibiting themselves from acts of intimacy. The Torah tells us what's mutar and what's asur. What's permitted is permitted, what's prohibited is prohibited. And sometimes, especially people who do tshuva, have aspirations to be very holy. And that's great. But we have to know that in the home, being holy is about being together and having a warm and close relationship. And what's permitted is permitted. And hamarbe devarim, he who does too many things, he adds things beyond what the Torah prohibited, mevichet, ultimately he causes sin. So, yes, we're learning to be God-fearing people, and we aspire to be God-fearing people, and part of being a God-fearing person is distancing ourselves from questionable acts, not only prohibited acts. So that's why we learned today. Verify the questions. Don't live with questions in your life. When you have a question, yes, part of being a God-fearing person is that we have to stay away. But we try not to have questions. We try to verify what's mutar and what's asur. And that which is mutar, is mutar. And amarbe devarim, he who tries to add it, ultimately it backfires. Yes, David?
Who's Torah?
What do you mean?
Different voices say different things, different circles say different things.
For that, you need a rabbi.
A rab?
Have a rav. That's what we began with. A seilach harav. The key to all this is having a rebbe.
That picks your circle.
Again?